Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
This is All About Wine. A talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast.
Well, hang on. My video's not showing. Oh, sorry. Hang on. Let me try this again. Your show will go live in 3, 2, 1, boop, Blog Talk Radio. Oh, there it goes.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's
All right. Yeah, there we go.
All right.
We are on again.
Yeah. I was hearing the audio. The video was playing on my local, but it wasn't going out. It happened to me about an hour ago when I did a test, you know, make sure the video settings are good. And
right.
I ran the video. Couldn't see it, could hear it. And so I stopped it, started it again, and then I could see it and hear it. So
uh-huh.
It's just sometimes, I don't know. It must be
live. Yeah. Wow.
Blog Talk Radio. It must be a Blog Talk Radio thing.
It probably is. Yeah. We have issues with them. We've had issues with them over the years. And so, yeah. So,
but we
were supposed to have a guest tonight. Anna Diago Draper. Well, she has her own brand. She is from Covey Hill Vineyards, Sonoma Valley, and that is her wine, and that is her brand. Her and her husband's, and she distributes through Naked Wine, which is Naked Wine actually promotes wines from, and so she is one of many that go through them. A lot of women through Naked Wine too. I think that might be her calling in right now too. I see her sitting in the green room, and she can probably explain to us more about what Naked Wine is and everything else than me sitting there trying to bumble around. So we will go ahead and bring her on. Hello, Anna. Welcome to All About Wine.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, it is our pleasure, believe me. But I was just bumbling around here trying to explain the concept of Naked Wine. And since you are a member, I guess, of the Naked Wine, maybe you can explain to us what it is and what it's all about.
So I'm a Naked winemaker that's making wine for Naked Wine. The largest.
Wait a minute, and you're breaking up here. Mike, are you getting clear video of her, or is she breaking up for you also?
No audio. It's in and out really bad.
Yeah, same thing here. It's I'm not getting we're hearing about half of what you're saying. Would you mind hanging up and trying to call us again? For some reason, it's a very poor connection right now.
Call again.
Thank you.
Oh, try that. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just... crackling and breaking up. And
yeah, I was only catching a very little of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, me too. That's why I was hoping that maybe recalling. Okay, yeah, there she is again.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, let's see if this is any better here. Are you there?
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. Good. Let's see if we get a better connection here. The other connection, you were just cutting in and out, and we could barely understand what you were saying. So the question is, what is Naked Wine, and how does that work?
So Naked Wine is presently the largest DTC, direct-to-consumer winery, in the United States. And the concept is they're going to disrupt.
It's doing it again. You're fading out and in. I don't know why. We've never had this issue before with a call in. I don't know why we're having a problem with you tonight.
Better now?
That was, yes.
Better?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Just go ahead and you know, say a full sentence. Let's see if it cuts in and out. No, we're still losing your audio.
Not sure. I full bars here. I'm actually sitting outside to trying and having better service.
Okay, now that I heard everything you said there without.
Yeah. Stay in that position. Don't move.
Don't stay right there. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Don't move.
Yeah. Okay. So let's try it again. If you're in a good spot right now, let's try it again. Explain to us what Naked Wine is. You said it's the largest direct-to-consumer
wine
distributor.
So the goal of Naked Wines is basically to disrupt the 3%.
Oh my God, the audio is cracking up again. I am getting so. Oh, we're not hearing a clear voice from you. I don't know why this is so, but it's not coming in clear.
What about now? Is it better?
Right now that was good.
That was
long
good?
Time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
I have you on speaker, so maybe that was you can't be on speaker.
That could be
I
the
was
problem.
Trying to be in three. Okay, so that might be the problem. So I'm gonna be super still here.
You're in a good spot. Don't move. Hold the phone
okay.
right here.
Don't move. Hold the phone.
Don't move.
Perfect.
Don't. Yeah, there we go. Okay, now we've got good connection. Okay, that's for some reason that thing was not accepting your speaker on that. So, all right, good. So let's try yet again. Direct
okay.
to consumer. Let's knock out and kill this three-tier system, which
sure.
I have hated for years. So,
I think everyone in the business has had that, because what it does to the consumer is it adds cost to the final
mm-hmm.
pricing. So, Naked Wine's business strategy is to support independent winemakers directly through the backing of members, and we refer to those members as angel investors. So they pay into what you would call a savings account, and when they have enough money to buy 6, 8, 12 bottles, whatever they wish, they can select wines made from these independent winemakers, and the wines that we make for Naked Wines are sold exclusively on the website. Can't find these wines in distribution anywhere. But that's how we cut the middleman. So on one end, we are supported directly, is in a way almost crowdfunding. So these angels that pay into the business, they are the ones paying for grapes, for production costs, for barrels, for glass, bottling, everything. and then the wine is goes in directly to distribution centers that belong to Naked Wine, and from there to directly to the consumers.
Wow.
You don't need to be an angel to buy wines from the website, but if you are an angel, you get up to 60% discount as a thank you for the support and your membership in a way. And the success of it comes with the fact that you're able to find, I mean, Naked Wine supports winemakers from, I think, from about 14 or 15 countries around the world. In the United States, presently, I think there's about 96 winemakers supported by Naked Wine.
Wow.
It's really fun. It's very different from a wine club because you can basically select a wide variety of wine styles and select wines from all over the world. And it's a great way to get into wine if you're just starting to find these different wine styles you like. But I think if you're also a savored and seasoned wine consumer, you can also find a lot of different wines that will, I feel, appeal to you within the website.
Wow, that's
so that's about it in a nutshell.
a great concept. A great concept. It's nakedwines.com.
Nakedwines.com is the website, correct?
If anyone wants to.
Yeah.
Wants
and
to
the cool thing is, each bottle, each label, it really is a passion project for each winemaker, and you'll find a really wide array. I mean, in the U.S., you have, obviously, California is the one that's more represented, but there's winemakers from Oregon, from Washington, from the Finger Lakes, from a really wide array, from Texas. There used to be a few. I'm not sure if there's still some. And the support given to independent, I mean, I've been with them since they came to the United States in 2012. I've held full-time jobs at I was director winemaker for a winery in Napa for a while, but I've always done Naked Wines. And presently, I'm actually 100% independent winemaker working with them because I really wanted to give that jump and feel what it would be to be 100% independent winemaker. And and I'm quite enjoying the experience. This is my first harvest as a 100% independent winemaker.
Is it really? Okay. That's a great concept. Because, you know, again, the three-tier system is outrageous. I've dealt with that when I had the winery and all, and it just, I hated it. And I think, like you said, most wine makers and most wineries do hate the three-tier system. It's expensive.
Well, and it's our joke as winemakers, right? It's not hard to make the wine. It's to sell the wine that it's hard.
Yeah.
And in this extent here, we know that our wines are sold online. So we focus solely on making the wines, conceptualizing the wines, working on the marketing, labeling. The wines, the sales part itself, we don't need to be traveling and losing all this time promoting the wines within distributors or sales, because the wines sell directly online. So it is, for a winemaker, it is an incredible concept. And there's a lot of, for me, a lot of joy in that, that part is out of the equation.
Yeah, well, it just seems like it'd be so much easier to not have to worry about that sales end of it because, well, like you say, you want to make wine. You don't want to get up there and sell. And I've talked to so many wineries over the years, and they just hate the concept of having to go out there and spend so much time promoting their wines. And it does take away from the love of making it. I mean, it really does. So, okay,
yeah,
now.
100%.
Yeah, now let's talk about Anna a little bit here. You mentioned that you're making your own wine. Tell us your story from when you decided to,
become a winemaker.
Yeah, well, even before then. I mean, I'm looking back.
Sure.
Where your roots are and all that stuff.
Sure. So I was born and raised in Portugal, and I do come from wine. Yes, yeah. I was born in Lisbon and then raised outside of Lisbon. And studied and lived in the south of Portugal in the Alentejo region for about 10 years before I moved here. So I've spent, you know, my whole family is still there. I came to the U.S. I knew I wanted to do something related to agriculture, but I wasn't exactly sure what. And so I dabbled in different things. I loved honeybee keeping, different things. And then in my third year, we had a five-year degree. In my third year, I took a first winemaking class, and the professor was a very seasoned winemaker. He's still a really big consultant, and he has his own brand in Portugal. And so he didn't give us a very, you know, academic vision of winemaking, but a very practical one, because he was a winemaker making wine. And I think after that class, a lot of people who attended, we were very taken and really curious about what it entailed. And it was a bit of, you know, winemaking 101, kind of very global, but we got to do a little bit of everything. And I was very curious. And then after that, I applied and I started working in the university. I studied at University of Évora in the south of Portugal. And I worked in the experimental cellar on and off while I was studying, helping in different projects, and working a lot with a cellar master there who had been there for 30 years and was just, had so much knowledge, and I learned a lot from him. And I worked a couple of harvests there in wineries, and then I wanted to have an international experience, and I just always been very, I had been to California once when I was a teenager on a vacation, and the U.S. always had just a lot of appeal, particularly California. So I decided to do a harvest here, and I loved seeing the technology used that's coming from Portugal. Everything was much more old school. And I was also very taken by the number of women winemakers that I had the luck to meet. And in Portugal, it's a little, I think, more open now, but this was almost 20 years or 18 years ago when I came. And back then, unless your family was in the industry, it was very hard for a woman to become a winemaker. You would make it into the lab position, but to go all the way was really, really, it was very hard. And so at that point, I was debating, what do I want to do? Do I really want to fight this fight and become a winemaker? Do I want to do other things? And after that harvest here, it just really solidified, this is what I want, what do I need to do to get it? And then after harvest, I returned to Portugal because I had to write my thesis. And then the winery where I interned, they sponsored my visa to come back. And I was very excited. I was supposed to be here for a year or two. And I was very welcoming the experience. And then classic story, I met my husband, who's American. He lives here in Sonoma County. He's from Sonoma County where we live, and I never left. So classic story. But I really love California. I actually think Sonoma County, there's a lot of similarities with Portugal. In geography, even soil types, there's some soil series that are very similar. But I'm actually also started in 2019 making wines from Portugal for the Naked Wines project. And that's been also really fun to now make wines from California and from Portugal for this project. So I started, I stayed, I was at that winery at Rutherford Hill for about 6 years, and then I went on to Artesa Vineyards and Winery in Carneros in Napa Valley, and I was director of winemaking there for about 8 years, and until very recently when I decided to start consulting and started to really focus on my brand.
Wow.
So that's about it in a nutshell.
what a story, though. I mean, you've been all over and done everything, and you've got yourself quite an education on that. Now, let's talk about your wine. You say that you're doing well. Actually, I am enjoying a bottle of your Tempranillo right now, Covey Hill Vineyard in the Sonoma Valley.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. That one.
it's good. It really is. It's very good. It's got some rich flavors.
Thank you.
Just, right amount of tannins. I like the tannins that are coming out. It's not real acidic, which is really pleasant because the acid is balanced very well with the wine. It's not.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's very young still. It's a 2021. It got bottled in February. So I think it's the wine that has a lot of ageability and needs a lot of time to age in bottle. But
it
for
does.
Naked wines, we really need, we need to, when we make these wines, it's different than making it for, you know, if you're making it for a very high-end winery where, you know, people will pay a lot of money for a bottle, but then they would hold on to it, right? The agent and their seller. Most of Naked Wines consumers, they want wine with personality, with great flavors, great balance, but it also has to be a wine that's ready to consume in the very near future. So that definitely dictates how we pick the grapes, the level of ripeness, how we produce the wines, how we ferment the wines. That's from a tiny little vineyard in the heart of Sonoma Valley in Sonoma County. The owner is just, and that's one of my favorite things, obviously. I think a lot of winemakers is connecting with the grape growers. And really, I love that site. It's so special. He has about 4 different clones of Tempranillo. And it's about, I think in 2021 was less than 100 cases. This year will be about 150. So it's a small vineyard, and it's just a wine that gives me a lot of pleasure to make. And that's the cool thing with Naked Wines, right? You find a vineyard, say, hey, I found this great vineyard. It's a small project, but I think it'll do really well. And I'd say 90% of the time they will agree with our crazy ideas and support these endeavors, even if it's a small project like the Coffee Hill Tempranillo.
Well, you nailed it when you said that you wanted to get one that was young and had a lot of character. This does. I'm really impressed. You brought up so many questions when you were talking about that. You say you clear it with Naked Wines, or you go if you want to do it from. I'm lost on how this works.
So basically we pitch the projects, right? So a lot of times they say, hey, we have a vineyard. That is available that another winemaker, for instance, doesn't want to work with you. Are you interested? That was mostly in the beginning. And 2012 was the first vintage they came to the U.S. because they existed first and foremost in England, in the U.K. That's where the company was founded.
Oh, really?
And it came to the United States. Yes, it was a UK concept, and they supported winemakers from all over the world from the get-go. Not a lot from California, mostly I'd say from Europe, and some in the New World, mostly Australia and South Africa. And then when they came to California, obviously a wide array. And I think people were very suspicious of the concept when it appeared in this kind of too good to be truth.
Really.
But I was familiar with it because I was at a symposium and ran into the founder, Rowan Gromley, was one of the speakers. And so I was very familiar with the concept. When it came to the U.S., I kind of jumped at the opportunity. So in the beginning, it was more than saying, hey, we have these vineyards. Are you interested? It would be like yes or no. And as the time went by, then I was given more of that freedom of saying, hey, I found this great sourcing. For instance, I make a Tempranillo in a Torriga Nacional vineyard in Amador County that I found through a friend. I found a Covey Hill vineyard. I make a high altitude Cabernet from a vineyard up in Cloverdale Peak in Mendocino County.
Oh.
In all these from California, another one from Alexander Valley. And these are vineyards that I found throughout the years. And sometimes we hear yes, sometimes we hear a no. The wines from Portugal was kind of like that. After a trip to Portugal, I spent about a month and really reconnecting with friends in the industry. Excuse me. And on the plane back, I just had this epiphany. I said, you know, in my mind, I said, I want to make wine in Portugal again. And so I started making a plan and found great partners to work with there. And I pitched the idea and they said, that's a great idea. Let's do it. So it's a bit, you know, you can pitch the idea. It doesn't mean necessarily will happen, but they're definitely very, very open if it's something that makes sense within the business model, and more than that, within each brand, right? Because each brand has a story to tell. For me, I make wines Portuguese varieties or Iberian varieties in California. I make about 3 different Tempranillos in California.
Wow.
And now I'm trying to put that into also in Portugal, making a Tempranillo from Portugal. I will release an old vine Tempranillo next year.
Oh, wow.
I made some aromatic white, some rosé. So, but I want that to have some personality too. I just don't want to say, oh, I'm making these, you know, wines from Portugal that have no, you know, they're just random or generic. I want that personality from the wines in California to also translate into the wines in made in Portugal.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, yeah. Well, tasting this one now, you've got yourself a good basis for what you're doing. These are great.
Thank you.
The Naked Wines, they are still headquartered in England then?
Well, the initially they were in England, and now there's an office in England, office in Napa in the United States, an office in Denver, and they started about 6 years ago in Australia also. So now the company exists in all those 3 countries. I actually think the headquarters are still, yes, the headquarters, I believe, are still in the U.K.
Yeah. So when you say you clear with them, you contact them, it's just a local thing or is it?
No, I mean, we have a winery. So Naked Wines has a winery in Kenwood in Sonoma Valley.
We call it
the Naked Wine Studio. Mm-hmm. We make a lot of, not all the winemakers make their wines there, but the ones of us who are located here produce our wines there. There's a director of winemaking who we clear with. There are production planners and we're always in contact, always, you know, we'll come probably January, it'll be time to plan, what am I making next year? And then we sit down and talk, look at volume, what worked, what didn't work. So the wines, the angels, or the angel investors, as we call them, they rate every wine online. So if you go to the website, you see that wines are rated from a 0 to 100 scale, and they leave reviews, which we reply to. So that's a really cool part. On one end, you have the feedback, positive and negative from the angels, but there's also that direct interaction with the winemakers, which is not usual. I think the angels quite enjoy that there's sometimes some banter and, you know, back and forth. We post things on the website, and there's a lot of intervention from us on having that feedback, and that also helps us to make better wines or to make wines that appeal to the angels, because at the end of the day, they're the ones supporting our dreams to make these wines. So if we're making wines that you know, they score low or they're not successfully with the angels, there might be, you know, a conversation saying, well, maybe we should review this. Maybe we should, you know, increase your production here and not there. So there's definitely a very open discussion. But, you know, as a winemaker, you know how it is, right? I mean, often we go to a vineyard, we see something or I don't know. I'm driving around and just have this crazy, stupid idea like, oh my God, this would be so fun. And then you tell them and sometimes they'll be like, no, thank you. And other times they love the idea and they say, yes, let's try it out. And so, and that's having that feedback, but also there's a lot of creativity that goes into it. And I think the company fosters that creativity within the independent winemakers. There's a lot of single vineyard wines, and so it's really, really interesting, and there's never a boring moment, let's say, like that.
I also understand that Nectar Wine really promotes women winemakers. I think that's a great idea there, because there are not a whole lot of women winemakers in the world.
No. Especially as ed winemakers or leading winemakers, I think it's about less than 10%. And in Naked Wines, I think it's about 35% of winemakers are women. So there's really a great work into supporting female women winemakers. Yeah, which I don't like to say. I like to say winemaker only. It's one of my pet peeves. Because I feel like, you know, like to be called a woman winemaker, that's discriminatory in itself. But I think
we're
not there yet.
Right.
We still need to say it. I think once that parity and that equality is more sustained, we can bypass that. But unfortunately, we're not there yet. But it gives me a lot of pleasure to work in a company where there is a lot of support for women winemakers, and that recognition, and they've recognized that disparity, and they, you know, made a conscious effort to support women winemakers, and I think that's fantastic.
I do too, and there's quite a few women that are in other aspects of the business. I've interviewed quite a few women over the years that are not the winemakers, but are in all sorts of other fields. But it just seems like that one level there to be a winemaker is for some reason hard.
Yeah, anything which is a president of a winery, GM, director of winemaker, head winemaker, those seem to be where that those leadership positions are where I think it's lacking a bit. It's improving quite a lot, but there's still definitely there's still a gap. We're still we'll keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, and that's it. And, you know, and if this is winemaking has been a good boy concept for so long, and it's hard to break out of that, but it's happening. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's happening little by little.
Yeah, your wines and the ones that you make and the grapes. Where do you source your grapes? We just had different vineyards that you find and you keep them, keep using those year after year, or do you find new ones, or what do you look at?
A combination. So, for instance, I do these wines from Amador County, and I've been doing those since 2013. So this, I still make the wines from there, and that's a really long-term relationship with that vineyard that I absolutely love. I have another vineyard that, for instance, this one in Cloverdale in Mendocino, I've made it on and off for the past 10 years. I stopped and I went back. It's just this love affair. And then there's a vineyard I just started. My first vintage was 2021 called Ramazzotti Vineyards. They're a producer in California. They have their own vineyard. And I've worked with them at Artesa for many years. And when the opportunity came to buy that they had Cabernet for sale, I just knew I really wanted to work with them for my own label. So it happens a little bit like that. And I'm really looking forward now. Before, it was hard for me, right, because I had a full-time job, and this was kind of almost a side gig for me, like something that would give me a lot of joy, but it wasn't my sole focus. Now that I've decided it's my sole focus, I'm very eager to expand and go to other AVAs, but I really, my pitch is to do a lot of Iberian varieties, so those varieties are mainly found, you know, in the Sierra foothills or El Dorado, Amador County, out of Napa and Sonoma, that unfortunately we're going through what I call the cabernetization, right? All these vines are being ripped and it's Cabernet everywhere. So, and I love Cabernet. I make Cabernet too. Don't get me wrong, but I think there's so much character. Sonoma County is not as much as Napa, I feel. There's still a lot of respect, and there's still a lot of, you know, we have those beautiful old vines in Zinfandel, some of them, you know, over 100 years old that are very preserved and very loved here. But I think that sourcing and scouting of grapes, I went to visit a couple vineyards this year and put myself on the wait list for grapes there, at Shake Ridge and in the foothills. And so that hunt for the perfect vineyard, it's a driving factor for me, a kind of a driving motor. And a lot of times, not just the vineyard itself, but how the site obviously is super important, but the relationship with the grower is as important, right? A grower that respects you, that, you know, is not always trying to make a buck out of you, that respect, maybe you could make more money having a contract with a different person each year, but he likes also that partnership and respects table and what each one of us gives the other. And so I'm looking a lot for that partnership with a grower is something. Number one is obviously the site, but I'm looking also for that relationship.
Oh, that's so important to have that relationship with your grower.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
You know what he's doing to your grapes, and if you want something a little different, if you have that relationship, he'll be happy to do it for you and all that. It really is an important thing.
And support each other. You know, in California, we've been through a lot with the fires and drought. These last 6 years have been very complicated, and there's just been, when you have that relationship, you can support each other. It's tried some, a little bit. Each part gives in a bit, and I've really found in these last few years that, you know, I didn't always knew if this approach was the best one, but now I know it is from my experience in the last few years with all the issues and challenges we've had.
No, it's unbelievable what the growers have went through there in California. It's amazing amazing that they didn't just pack it up and leave.
The perseverance is fantastic. I agree.
Yeah. You source your grapes from different vineyards and all that. How many wines do you make right now? How many different varieties?
Oh, gosh. So I make 3, 4, 7, 8, 9, 10 different wines.
10? Wow.
10, yes. 10 different wines. I produce about 10 different wines for Naked Wine. And they range from 100 cases to about 3,500 cases.
But you say you make three different Tempranillos. So is that part of your 10 and stuff like that?
I actually make 4. I make 2 different ones, in 3 in California, because I make so the Amador County wines is what I call the trio. So I do, from the same vineyard, I do a Trigan, as you know. I do a Tempranillo. And then I do a 50-50 blend of the two. And initially, the wine was just the 50-50 blend. And then that was there's a good story. That was one of my fights with Naked. And after 2 or 3 years of pitching, I think they were so sick of listening to me, they finally said, you know, they were beaten by exhaustion. And they finally said yes, because I really wanted to bottle the varietals independently. So we were already making the Trigger Tempranillo blend, but I said it would be really fun to bottle them on their own so the angels could see what each varietal brings to the blend. And I finally convinced them, and it's by far my most successful 3 wines. They sell out very fast, and they always have a very high rate of acceptance, and angels are very passionate about which one of the 3 wines they like the most. And then I do the Covihil that you tried, and I'm making 2 other Tempranillos in Portugal. And then I make a port out of Portuguese varieties from that same vineyard in Amador. And then 3 different Cabernets here in Sonoma County and Mendocino County. And these are all, for the most, they're all single vineyard. They're not all bottled as single vineyard wines, but they're all from one specific site. And I really like that. I guess the one I mix is, I have a red blend from Portugal that comes from different sites. But other than that, all these other wines, even the wines from Portugal, come from one vineyard only. And I really feel that I'm telling a story through a wine of this specific place in a determined place in time. So this each vintage tells a story, and that was one of my goals, was to make these wines from one site only, which could be very positive or very negative. If it's a bad vintage, you have no way to hide it, to make it go away. But it just gives me a lot of joy, and I love the challenge that it's to my winemaking journey as a winemaker, that you have to make the best wine possible because you have nowhere to hide it. Because that's it. That wine is what you're going to put in the bottle.
Well, if you're making 3 different casks on the same site, how much variation are you?
No, they're from different vineyards. One is from Alexander Valley, so warmer climate.
Okay.
Another one is from Moon Mountain, which is an AVA in the back of Moon Valley District, in the back of Sonoma Valley. And then the third one is a mountain site up in Cloverdale Peak. It's one of the highest AVAs. I think they sit in California. They sit about 2,200 feet of elevation.
Wow.
I actually just had to go there today to check on the grapes, and it's a trek to get up there. But it's just absolutely, feel like you're on top of the world with a view. So there are 3 cabs, but from very different sites throughout, within a radius of, 50, 60 miles. They're very, very 3 distinct sites
that I
make those Cabernets for. Yeah, and tastes very different too.
Yeah, it sounds like they would be quite different because of the elevation and all that. On those, that would be interesting. Your wine angels, wine grapes are expensive. Do they participate in the purchase of that? How does that work? Do you purchase them?
No. We purchase everything. So the business does. So what they do is by paying into their angel savings, their wine savings account each month, they're paying, obviously they're putting money there to buy the wines, but that money pays for our production expenses, pays for grapes, pays for the staff at the winery, the enological products at the winery, pays for barrels, pays for all of those things. So that money is a direct investment into the, basically it's what we call it is crowdfunding for winemakers.
I see.
So they are the winemakers' investors, but they don't invest directly. And I mean, in a way, sometimes there's competitions in wines that they want to see on the side. But other than that, they do that. And then us winemakers with, you know, the director of winemaking and production and planning at Naked Wines, all together we decide what wines to make and what wines we feel will be successful within our business model.
And once the angels get so much in their account, they can purchase wine at that time.
Yes, and even if you don't have enough, you can put the rest on your card. But because you're an angel, when you go to the website, you'll see a price of a wine. Let's say it's $50. And then you have what's called angel pricing. And that angel pricing can be $19.99, for instance, in that $50. So if you're not an angel, if you want to go today to the website and buy wine, you can. But you pay the $50. If you're an angel, you have that discounted price of $19.99, and that's your gift for supporting the business, for being an angel, as we call it.
So it would benefit anyone who's interested in this to become an angel, because it
absolutely
really pays off.
The other
off.
Thing is there's no real risk. There's 100%, so there's an hassle-free money-back guarantee. So all you need to do is email or call and say, I really didn't like this wine, and the value for that bottle is put back into your account.
Wow.
Yes,
wow,
so it's 100% guarantee at any time. So it's great because you can really take a chance, right? A lot of times I have, you know, most of my wines are red, so I have white people who love white wines. I decide to give a try to a red wine, or sometimes people think they're buying a still wine, or a dry wine, but they're buying my port and they don't like it. If anything like that happens, or even the style is just something that, you know, it doesn't fit your palate, you didn't enjoy it, it's 100% return guarantee on your purchase. So, I mean, that's a win-win in that sense, right? Because there's
fantastic.
No real risk. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go, listeners. Naked Wines, what a deal. And this, you get this Tempranillo here that I'm enjoying tonight. This is fantastic. As you're talking, I'm sipping, and I really enjoy it. Okay, so you mentioned barrels. Do you have a facility yourself, or is it a community facility that you all use?
It's a community facility. I wouldn't call it a custom crush because it's exclusively for Naked Wines winemakers, but it's kind of we call it the Naked Wine Studio. So there's about 10 of us, I believe, maybe more, that make wine there. Our barrels are stored there. They're fermented. They're aged there. So we have control over the wines throughout the whole process. The wines are bottled there, and then from there, then they're shipped to the Naked Wines warehouses for distribution. But yeah, we have 100% control of the whole winemaking process. And it's actually quite fun. Like now during harvest, sometimes, you know, there's 2-3 of us walking in and out of the winery. And sometimes we taste, you know, if we have the time, taste each other's tanks and kind of. So there's great camaraderie. And it's one of the really fun things of the model is how many winemakers are supported by the business. And, you know, after 10 years of working with them, you really build great relationships and friendships within the winemakers.
Oh, I am sure. Yes.
Yeah.
So what you back to your winemaking then, I'm beating around it on the questions. Do you use, say, your Cabernets, or even Tempranillo and all these? Do you use oak barrels? Would you use French, American? How long?
French. I use 100% French. They vary a bit, but usually they spent about 15 to 16 months in barrel. I use all French oak, and I use rough. I don't use anything more. It goes between 20% and 25% new oak. I really love, and some of them, I think the Coville is a little less because it could be a bigger wine. So sometimes I use only about 10-15% new oak, and then I use a few, you know, 1- and 2-year-old barrels to replace that new oak. But it's great, and I mean, it would be impossible on my own to make these wines because, you know, the barrel investment alone, as you know, could be quite steep. Yeah. It could be an absolute challenge.
Staggering the cost
insane. Yeah,
it is.
I actually was for the first time I went to see the forest this year in France.
Oh,
with
did
one
you?
Of the Coopers. Yeah, I've never been, and I actually now understand why French oak barrels are so. The cost and what goes into making them and the forests themselves. And it's quite fascinating, but yeah, we're very lucky that we have that support, but I'm very specific. I know there's a lot of winemakers using American oak. There's a few wines now that came out in bourbon barrels. It's a new thing. And a lot of angels, I see a big push on those style of wines. But for me, and I like to mix, Coopers, I really feel barrel is a bit of our spice, right, part of our spice rack, but I really try not to overdo it with new oak.
Yeah, you can. It can be overpowering. I mean, it's... The oak can just take away from so much on a wine if you're not careful.
Exactly. You want the fruit to be the star of the show and the oak to be there as the backup. You don't want... Sometimes you feel the reverse, particularly in California wines. I feel like it's changing a lot. I feel especially the last 4 or 5 years, there's been definitely a pushback, but you still have those very, you know, oak-driven wines. That's definitely something I want to go away from.
Yeah, well, that's good because, like you say, California, I'm glad to see that they're backing away from it. They have been from what I've tasted lately, but there was a period there, early 2000s up to about 2015, it's just like everything was oak to the point where you couldn't detect anything else in a wine. It's just oak. It got out of
hand. And that's
not
what you want, right? Nice to have that, like, at that lengthy finish, right, that you feel like that, you know, in like that retro palette that you have that oak. But you want the fruit to be at the forefront of everything. That should always be the dominating feature of a wine. Particularly with Chardonnay, I feel that's been a big, big shift in California wines.
That's good.
Which I'm very happy to see. I love Chardonnay, and I think California is great, particularly working in Carneros, the cooler area of Napa. They're just beautiful vineyards. You can make just such stellar Chardonnays. And they could be barrel fermented, but... you know, Burgundy is one of my favorite. a nice white Burgundy is a favorite of mine. So obviously we can't have that achievement to, you know, when people say, oh, I make a Burgundian wine. Well, we are in California. We have heat. We have other things. But you could still have that restraint in your wine. And I think that's what people are trying to pursue more. And then you also see alternative varietals as doing a big comeback, and I hope more and more, particularly like I said earlier in Napa, that, you know, growers have the good sense not to rip apart these 100-year-old vineyards or 60-year-old vines to plant Cabernet to exhaustion, because I think eventually we will pay the price.
Yeah, and that's what's happening too. It's just Cabernet is becoming, well, it's so expensive, and they can sell a bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon for $120. And so they say, well, why don't I just put this 10 acres out here in Cabernet because I can make so much more money off of doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's the driving force.
Yeah, it's money. And that's what it all boils down to. But there's so many other fantastic varietals out there that would be better well served, I think, if they just pursued it, but they just, you know, it's become Napa Cabernet is really what it's boiled down to.
I think eventually we'll have to shift, and if it doesn't, the growers will pay, wineries will pay, there will be a price to pay. Maybe it's not now, maybe it's down the line, but eventually I feel this will come back to haunt us a little bit.
I think so. You're absolutely right. Because people will become jaded on the Cabernets. I mean, they'll be looking for other stuff. And
especially these younger generations. They're first ones to tell you, oh, my mom and dad drink Cabernet. I'm not drinking that.
and that's just what happens.
More unknown new varieties. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're looking for new varieties. They're looking for fruitier styles. And Cabernets can be fruity, but most wineries don't make it in the fruity style. And,
No.
But you're right. It's just, I think the prices, they're going to pay the price in a few years here, and then they're going to go, oh, why did we put all this Cabernet in?
Who decided that?
Who is that fault? exactly. So I have a little card here, and I was reading before the show, but I noticed that you won a number of awards. These American awards, are they Portuguese or are they Sonoma?
A few for Naked Wines. I got a gold medal for Decanter Magazine last year for the Three Nacional. That was very exciting. That was the first time an Amador County wine got a gold medal with the Decanter Wine Awards. That was very exciting. Then the Amador County Tempranillo got voted among the top 100 wines from Wine Enthusiasts last year.
Wow.
It rated as 27. That was awesome.
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, and the cool thing is, I mean, I've got different accolades with Artesa and the winery I worked before, but these accolades with Naked Wines are very, very exciting. And then I was very fortunate last year. I got nominated for Winemaker of the Year with Wine Enthusiast Awards, and that was it was very flattering, and it was just, I was among very, very talented winemakers, and it just felt really good to get, you know, that the recognition for the hard work that we all put in. But as I always say, that I get the recognition, but I can only get recognized because I had such an amazing, you know, kick butt crew working real, real hard too. It's hard for us winemakers to shine when we have an amazing crew right behind us and supporting us. And, you know, when I have these mad things I want to make, and they would always support my crazy dreams and say, okay, let's do it. So, it's been last year's, particularly last couple of years have been really, really exciting. A lot of nice recognition for the wines I make. Yeah.
That's great. That is really fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
A little bit, but congratulations on the awards and the recognition. That is something
great.
To be quite proud of. Mike, do you have any questions for Anna before?
I don't. I was thinking of one before the show that I was going to ask about. I was looking on the website. And there was and I don't know if this is something prevalent in the industry as a whole or what, but there was what was it? It was, this was like 2 hours ago, but short-term memory, is that bad? it was a statement dealing with anti-slavery. Is that?
Yes.
Do you know anything?
Yes. Yes. So we all had to, it was a very important thing within the company that we all the winemakers had to actually talk to the vineyards and to ensure and winemakers that make wines at different places that they were sure that there was no slavery or exploitation of in our case, I think a lot of it has to do with vineyard workers in the vineyards that we work with and in the wineries that we worked with. And it is a great thing about Naked Wines. There's an incredible social conscience behind the company. They just created Macario Montoya is one of the winemakers. He just created a scholarship for Latino to thrive within the industry, for opportunity, for scholarships. They work with the Roots Fund on a lot of different scholarships too. When we had our fires here, our very big fires in Sonoma County in 2017, they were able to raise over $1 million to help a school that works with children with development delays, and they were able to raise $1 million. They had a COVID fund during COVID for small wineries within Sonoma County, within California, not just Sonoma County, that were struggling because they couldn't sell. You know, small wineries are mainly DTC, and they sold their wines to the website with 100% of the money going to them. So there's a lot of social conscience within the business, which is obviously very, very, very rewarding for me, and I'm sure for most of all the winemakers to work in a business that is so, you know, not self-centered. And, you know, it's hard, it's easy to do, you know, a bit of whitewash and just not really follow what you say, but Naked Wines, it's very rewarding to see that they really walk the talk, as saying. And so it's been a project that it took about 2 years to pour to the anti-slavery, but they were able to within the company and within all the winemakers guarantee that there was no dubious issues within the vineyards and wineries we worked with.
Fantastic.
Yeah, okay. Right about it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
The your labels, did you design those? Where did your design?
Yeah,
for
so
all your labels?
Those are they're Portuguese tiles. They're called azulejos, and they're very traditional. Portuguese was the Moorish culture is very intertwined in our Portuguese culture, and so they're different. Each label is a different tile. And some are tiles from my mother, my mom and my grandmother were born in a very old neighborhood, traditional neighborhood in Lisbon. So one of my labels, for instance, is a tile from a church in the neighborhood where my mom and grandmother were born. Others are just some that I'm walking in Lisbon or somewhere in Portugal and I photograph the tile and I really love it. And then I use it for a label. Yeah. So each one of them is a traditional Portuguese tile.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And what does your husband do? Is he involved with your winemaking?
He's a cellar master at a small winery in Sonoma County called Skipstone. So it's very challenging. We have two young boys. So harvest for us is quite it's quite a challenge when you have children and both of you work in production. You can imagine the challenges that come with it. We rely a lot on family, babysitters, and to make it happen. But it's great because at the same time you have a partner that really understands what you do, and we really work as a team. He's incredibly supportive of everything that I do, and he's absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Has he always been involved in the wine business?
Not always, but when we met, he was already involved in it. He moved away, lived in Southern California, and then he moved back to Sonoma County and decided to, you know, did a harvest. And like many of us, you do a harvest and you just hooked up.
You're hooked. Yeah,
like,
I know.
It's like a drug.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
More, and then you want to keep doing it. Like, wow, this is fun. So
oh,
that's
fun.
Kind of like when he came back, he started and never stopped working in it. Exactly.
I know you do. You get hooked, and or you just actually you do a bottling with, you know, you get hooked up in a bottling line and you get hooked there. Or you know, it's just there's so many easy ways to get hooked in the whole production thing.
Yeah, I think harvest is really where it's born, I feel, right? Because it's the fast pace. There's so much camaraderie within the team. And for me, it was harvest. The first harvest I worked, I said, oh, my God, I want to do this for the rest of my life. And I feel
and
like this. When I have people, it's not. When I have, you know, you always have a lot of people want to do career changes, or a young woman or a man who comes to me and says, oh, I really want to be a winemaker. What do I do? And I always say, the first thing you do is you work a harvest because you got to love it. You love it, or you will be part of the next 30 years of your life. You'll have no fall, no summer. This is your life. So if you don't like it, then you'll know that this is not the right job for you. But you will know your first harvest. No one is different. You love it or you hate it.
That's so true.
So that's always my advice.
So true. And that really, that's great advice, because if you, that harvest, it's hard work. And I mean, harvest. It's hard work. And
it is very hard. It's a marathon, right? Not a sprint. It's hard work. Yeah.
Long, hard work. And it spreads out over a couple months, usually. And you just don't get up at, 9 and go home at 6. I mean, you just get up at dawn and you go home at, 11, 12 o'clock
whenever.
At night. You're up the next day. Yeah, I know.
You never know when.
But boy, I'll tell you, when the whole thing's done and you kick back and everybody's sitting around having a beer and a slice of pizza and you're going, wow, that was great.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
Yeah. It's a great feeling. But I always tell people, that's the first thing. The number one step is to do that. And travel, do it in other places and see how you like it. And if you love it, then you're in the right path. And if it's not for you, then you know that this should not be your business.
Yeah, that's
and
so
and there's
true.
Other ways of working in the industry, right? You can work in marketing in different parts, right? If wine industry is your passion, it doesn't have to be in production. But I think there's still the great allure and romanticism around being a winemaker. Which sometimes I'm surprised why it's really hard work and but it's also really fun. If someone asks, what do you do for a living? Oh, I make wine for a living. It's like, that's amazing.
That is really, I know. I had a winery and I made wine. People say, what do you do? I make wine. Oh, no, really? I do too. And I go, not a carboy in my closet.
I really make wine.
I really make wine. I know. And then people go, oh, wow. Yeah. So it's a cool thing. Anna, thank you so much for taking the time and talk with us tonight. Very informative. Everybody out there needs to get on the website, nakedwines.com, and become an angel, because it's a great concept and a great way to get some great wines. And once you do get on there, get yourself a bottle of her Tempranillo from Colby Hill Vineyard, Sonoma Valley. This is the 2021 vintage. This is fantastic. I said it before, I will say it again. You did an excellent job on this wine. And if all of your other wines are anything like this, I can see why you're getting so many accolades. So,
thank you so much, Ron. I really appreciate you both. And thank you for having me.
No, it was definitely our pleasure. Thank you. Before you go, give us contact information for Naked Wines and for Anna Diago Draper Winery, Wines, so
people
can get in
touch. You can go to nakedwines.com. So you just go to the standard website, and then you can search for wines. You can search for winemakers. You can search for countries. You can search for wine styles. There's a lot of different ways to go about. And for me, you can find me at Anna Diogo Draper, either on the website or on Instagram. And I'm not on Facebook. My Facebook is having issues. So right now, only on Instagram at Anna Diogo Draper Wine.
Very good. Thank you so
much.
Thank you.
Thank you so
much.
Best
of luck to you. And sometime in the future, maybe we can talk again. And if I'm ever in California,
I'd love to.
I would definitely come.
Oh, please
come and
let me know. Yes. I'd love to host you here. Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good
evening
now.
You too. Bye bye, you guys. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks.
That was interesting. Naked Wines. I've heard of Naked Wines before, but I never realized the full concept behind it. That is really, really an interesting concept. That's absolutely great. So, like I said, people out there who are looking at bypassing the middleman and saving themselves some money, and that's one of the great concepts about all this, is the three-tier system is something that's been a thorn in the side of, not just wineries, everybody, since they repealed Prohibition and set up the three-tier system. It has been a thorn in everybody's side. So this is a first step on getting rid of that. That's good. That's great to hear. So, you know, direct to consumer. This is what a lot of people are trying to do. So, okay. I wanted to say something too about All About Wine and about our show. We are live. We are one of the few shows. In fact, I think maybe about the only one that is actually live. What you hear from us is what you hear from us. We don't edit. We don't spend a couple of 3 hours after the show tearing it apart and putting it back together so it sounds nice and pretty and everything. This is the show. I mean, as is was obvious when we started this one, and we had troubles with Anna getting her so we can hear. So, I just wanted to point out that this was, we appreciate everyone out there who listens to us. And if you listen to us live, fantastic. We appreciate that. If you listen to us on archives, it's the same thing you hear when we're live. We don't go back in on archives and edit stuff and rearrange it and try to make it a pretty show. This is what you get. Oh. And we do appreciate all the listeners out there and everyone that has been following us for years and years. Yes. Thank you, bus people. So I was thinking about that the other day, and I was looking at some blogs out there and all that, and most all the blogs I looked at are edited, and so I thought, wow, we're a rare breed out here still that we're going live.
And it's been live since I think we did one or two recorded shows because of the time difference. I remember, wasn't there like Australia? There was the Drifting Winemaker. I think it was
right
for one in, maybe it was Italy. I think that the duo from Alma, Italy. I think it was.
I think you're right.
Or something. But a couple of record, but it's not recorded in a sense of, oh, let's take out all of the pauses. Let's take out the, you know, the phone issues or anything like that. It's even though we have recorded, you know, maybe three shows tops in the past 13, 14 years, we recorded it live without any editing or, you know, making it look, sound good type
of
thing.
And we just stuck it on there.
No correction. Yeah, it was like, this is the way we recorded it live, and this is what you're getting. It's like, you know, take it that way. So, very good. And it's been like that since 2009. So
yeah, since we started, we've been going live. All of our shows have been going live. And I've been asked whenever I book guests, the guests themselves or the people who book the guests ask, you know, when are we recording this show and is there anything? I said, no, we don't record. We just do it live. We get on there. We just talk with people. It's just a conversation. And we've never had really real issues. People have always been very open and interesting. And we've had some great guests over the years live. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, it's never been anything we've said, oh no, we need to edit this or we need to not air this. It's everything has been it's fantastic. So I was thinking about that the other day.
A few of the guests, or not the guests, but the listener callers, that's kind of,
that's
there was
been
a time
issue.
I think I removed something. I did re-upload or re-edit that episode, but just to get their stupid comment off of there. And that, unfortunately, ruined it for anybody else who wanted to call afterwards. Kind of saw what they wanted to do on the air, and it got to be too many of them. And it's like, I guess we have to close the line down. So, Chef Rob. I don't know why you just... Chef Rob just jumped in on the chat room on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining us there. And but we're at the end of the show, unfortunately. It is let me see which clock
eight,
I want to look at.
Almost 8:10. 8:09,
It is 8:04 on my second monitor.
Bye. You're 5 minutes off. Oh gosh.
I sure am. Yeah. It is. It was 30 minutes off about the half hour, and then
you catch up.
And then it caught back. Ran a marathon, and it was on time for a bit. Now it's backing off again. So
now it's 8:10. We have a guest next week, though. Y'all can tune in next week. Our guest next week is John.
John?
Yeah, from Australian Wines. He's talking about Australian wines and stuff. That should be interesting, too. Australian wines are always very popular. And so he will be our guest next week.
Now, is he in Australia, or is he in the U.S. or someplace around here?
I think he's in the U.S. I don't have the thing pulled up in front of me right here now.
I was wondering. What's Australia time now? It's like 3 days now, isn't it? Aren't they like 3 days ahead of us? I forgot how that works.
Yeah, they go across the international date line, and then they bounce back, and then it's strange time difference. We did talk to someone in Australia, though.
We did.
Live, you know. So,
I can see. Oh, in Perth, Australia. Perth, Australia right now, it's Friday, 8:11 a.m. Oh, so they're 12 hours ahead of us.
Yeah,
that's not
bad. We don't have to worry about, middle of the night type thing.
Yeah, like we did with we were trying to negotiate the time from the couple from Italy.
that was an issue there. Let's see, we can do this. Same thing we've talked to people from England, and we had connection problems, and we never did get back with them. But we talked to people from England, and we had to do a Sunday morning on our time to get something decent on them because of the time change. And
the Drifting Winemaker was in Bali, I think.
Bali,
I remember him. I remember him saying the Drifting Winemaker from Bali. And that
just arrived that morning.
Let's see what Bali time. Oh, see, that's not bad either. Bali, Indonesia is 8:12 a.m. in Bali. Wait a minute,
that doesn't
make sense.
That's 12 hours. 12 hours even.
Yeah, it's just like Australia. What am I missing? Yeah. I am geographically incompetent right now. Yeah, right. I can't. Chef Rob decided to leave the chat room, so sorry about that. All right, it is 8:06 on this clock and 8:12 on the other one. Guess we will close the show now unless you have any last minutes.
Here we go.
Don't
forget. I just found it. Next week Jonathan Ross to discuss their new book that he wrote with James Loops. They are sommeliers, and their book is How to Drink Australian Wine, an Essential Modern Wine Book. So that was published just September the 12th. So that book's only been out like a month. But they're going to why there's no better time than to drink Australian wine, fascinating insights into the industry, growing conditions and all that. Three reasons why Australia's regions rival the world's top regions and other points. So, should be an interesting show next week. We're going to be talking about Australian, not Austria, but Australian, the continent down under next week. So that should be interesting.
Very cool. The 19th, mark your calendars now, October the 19th. You can join us live, or, if you normally tune in on the archives, we appreciate that as well. And, we'll talk to you all next week. Thanks again.
Talk to you next week. Thanks
safe.
For listening.
Yeah.
Be safe out
Thank
there.
You. We'll be
Don't forget, FlightLineRadio.com. That's, streaming all the time, flightrunradio.com, streaming all the time. And Mike is live Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern time. Way too early for me to listen. I listen to Flightline Radio, just let it stream in my ears all the time. But listening to Mike live, way too early.
Yesterday, Yesterday was the encore, the replay of First and 15th with Phil Carruth and Cap. It's on Monday mornings at 7 a.m. and then Wednesday at 7 p.m. I should put that on Wednesday. It's too hard to remember. But anyway, I listened to the whole show yesterday, and I was laughing so hard, especially when they mentioned Flatline. They go, "Do you think he edits this show?" And he says, "Worldwide, aren't we? We're worldwide." And he goes, and Phil goes, "Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure we're worldwide." Well, does he translate this into other languages? And Phil goes, "I think he does." And I'm sitting here going, "No, don't."
The more they talked, I was just yelling back, "No, I don't put this in different languages."
Do that. Yeah, no.
Oh God.
It is a funny episode. So they really are.
Hilarious. Yeah, come down on the 15th and we replay it. You know, after my system grabs it. But oh my gosh, it's just funny.
It really is. It is good comic relief.
Yes.
So, flightlineradio.com. Tune in to it anytime and give it a listen.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We will talk to you here on All About Wine next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio and every place.
Have a good week.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
That is it. And briefly.
Green room.